you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Take care of first.
Hi.
You know what I like to eat?
Wendy's.
Yo, man, I can't really talk about how much I love Wendy's the way Monty Poole can, but yeah. I'm going to try. It is really good, especially when you get like the double decker, you feel me, and it's a little juicy. And
what's the
like,
double decker?
There's like a double
the
decker.
The two square patties.
The two square patties, and it's like... It's hella greasy and stuff. It greases through the bag. It's so good though. It's so good. And then you get the ice cream in the middle, and you get the frosties, and you get the chili. Shout out Wendy's, man. Let's get to the podcast episode.
Okay.
This week we have Brendan. Look, Kareth is in a trance right now. She's thinking about.
I love fast food so much, but I really try not to eat it. As often as I want it.
But when I do eat fast food.
So thank you for putting that in my mind, because now I've got like little chicken nuggets floating through my head.
Anyway, so okay. This week on the podcast, we have Brendan Haywood.
What's the name of the podcast?
Running Plays.
Mm.
We got him on the Running Plays podcast. And I am really excited about this one, because me and Brendan go way back.
How do you go back?
I used to intern. We'll talk about this after the episode. But I interned at Turner Sports in 2016. He was one of the only NBA players that really took me under their wing.
That's nice.
And really like made sure I was good, as I was a broke college student in Atlanta. Didn't even know anything about Atlanta or Georgia. He always helped me out. So shout out Brendan Haywood. Let's get to the episode. Tap in.
Brendan Haywood, it's awesome to have a moment of your time. Thank you so much. How's your day going?
Oh, thank you for having me. My day's going pretty good. Been a little hectic, but I'm here.
Yeah, basketball season. It's on right now. The Warriors are in a unique situation where maybe in the past 3 years they've gone from a championship team to game six of the finals to now, with all these injuries and changes, they have the worst record in the league. That's a lot of change in just 3 years. With this season and their struggles, what's the best way for the coaches to get them through this rough patch?
I think the best way for the coaches to get the Warriors through this rough patch is just to focus on the team they have and what their task at hand is. You want to make sure every day that the culture is right, the young guys learn the right way to play, and you figure out who's a part of the future and who's not. It's almost like this year for the Warriors is like a gap year. It's a weeding out process. Mm-hmm. So you see guys like, okay, we got something in Pascal. He's going to be a part of the future, but now you're looking to see, is Willie Cauley-Stein going to be a part of the future?
Yeah.
What about Poole? Like some of these other guys. But you give these young guys their minutes and you continue to feed them good information. You do have champions around when you have Draymond, Clay, Steph. They're not, I mean, some of those guys, all those guys are hurt right now. But they'll still be around to help the culture. But you just want these young guys to understand what they're playing for, learn to play the right way, and then from there you figure out who's a part of the future. This is going to be a bad year for Golden State, but it might end up helping them in the long run.
I think so. You're building experience, right? There are guys who are getting minutes who wouldn't ordinarily have that minutes. There are guys who are fighting to raise their value in the league or to even stay in the league. So I know fans are frustrated right now, but nobody should look at this as a lost season, right?
No, it's not a lost season, because in the end, like I said, the guy that just jumps out the most to me is Pascal. Like I liked him at Villanova, but he really seems like he's figured out how to score in the league. So that's something that the Warriors didn't have, that just that guy off that rough, rugged guy that could come in there and score. He kind of reminds me of early Millsap a little bit when you watch their game. So I think a guy like him developing is good for the Warriors. I think the fact that they're going to get a very high draft pick is good for the Warriors. And when you combine the experience of the young guys, the high draft pick, with the Splash Brothers coming back, Draymond, all those guys next year, you're going to have a very good product.
Mm-hmm. The future is bright.
Yes.
And I'm glad you mentioned Eric Paschal, because he could be a Rookie of the Year contender right now. Are there things you made a face there?
Well, I think that he's going to be a big time rookie, but rookie of the year, I think, is going to be in Memphis. I think it's going to be Ja.
You think it's going to be Ja? Okay.
I thought it was going to be Zion, but he's going to miss too many games. I think Ja is going to have that locked up, as long as his back situation is done within a week, which is not supposed to be serious. But I think Ja Morant has that locked up.
Okay. What have you noticed about Pascal's power? Like, just as a rookie, and even understanding that he's raw, he's still averaging about 17 points per game. He's really using his shoulder. He can get to the rim. Are there things in his game that you already see that have impressed you?
Yeah, the biggest thing I've seen is in his game is that he knows how to score. Mm-hmm. And if you watch him at Villanova, they always used him in the mid-post area. And I know that's supposed to be like the not it thing to do in the league is to take these contested twos, but that's his game. He's very good at playing in the mid-post, mm-hmm. and he's good at swipe throughs, gets to his spots. He pulls up, shoots over the defense. He's also good at getting to the basket. He's powerful. So I like his game, and I like how they use him. And I think when they get everybody back, he probably won't be a starter then, but guess what? You now can use him as a guy off the bench for instant offense, and you can run plays through him, and he's getting a crash course on NBA development.
Yeah. One of the things Pascal heard when he was coming into the league, like the draft day criticism, was you're too old. And he was wondering, like, what does that mean? Are people seeing something
How
wrong
old is
with
he?
Me? He spent 4 years. He's 23 or 24. But he spent the 4 years, technically five, because he had a redshirt year when he transferred to Villanova. You were a four-year guy, right, at
yeah.
UNC?
Did yeah, but, you? I was 21 when I came to the league. He's
24, yeah.
man.
Yeah,
that's old.
Yes, he is. What do you think about that, though? Guys who stay in the league all 4 years, do you see them better equipped to become pros in that first year? Do they have a leg up on entering this career?
Every situation is different because there's going to be some guys that need 4 years of college. There's going to be some guys that don't need college at all, and they're going to be able to be fine. But the more you stay in school, the more you learn about the game, the more you understand basketball. So, yeah, they're going to be able to know certain nuances of the game if you stayed in school longer. But I also understand the older aspect of it. Because if you have a guy that's 23 years old, he doesn't have as high a ceiling as a kid that's 19. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, that's why Pascal's probably got a lot of knocks against him. They say he's old because if he would have been 18 or 19, he probably would have been a lottery pick. But because he's 23, people feel like he is what he is. And he just has to continue to improve and not let that hold him back.
All right, let's talk about the center position. I want to move on. I'm talking to a 14-year vet. Mm-hmm. What are the changes that you've seen in the center position? During your career, did you sense the changes? And then now, even in 2019?
Well, the game changed a lot in my 14 years. From when I first came in, it was all about the back-to-the-basket centers and being big and strong because you had guys like Shaq in the league and Yao Ming, and you had to have multiple guys to be able to throw at those type of players. Then as I transitioned towards the middle and the end of my career, the game changed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with the success of teams like the Spurs and the Golden State Warriors. And they were running a lot of pick and rolls, and they created – it's all about ball movement now. Now it's not about the individual post-up game. It's about ball movement. So now centers are more screeners, rollers. Defensively, it's changed a lot. When I played, I really just had to be a guy that could hold my own one-on-one and be a shot blocker. But now you have to be able to play the screen and roll, switch on guards, and move your feet. If you can't move your feet, you can't play.
Yeah.
And that's why certain guys have higher value. A guy like Clint Capella has high value because, yeah, he rolls to the basket and he gets all the dunks from James Harden, but he can also switch to pick and roll and move his feet. If you can't move your feet, you're considered a dinosaur in this league and you won't play that long.
What do you think about centers really stretching the floor now as well, shooting the three? Did you ever foresee that?
No, actually, I did not, because when I played, they said the farther away you got from the paint, the shorter your career was going to be. And I think that people have gone a little bit too far. Not saying that centers shouldn't shoot threes. I just still think there's a place for guys dominating in the low post and in the paint. And it's not always just about analytics. Sometimes you can go in there, like a guy like Joel Embiid. Sometimes he can just run down the lane and seal right in front of the basket and get a layup. Mm-hmm. A layup is still the best shot in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Or he can get fouled, and he's a great free throw shooter. So now you put the other team in the bonus. You foul, you get the other center in foul trouble. Now you get to play against a backup. So there's some pros and cons to the way the game is changing. I just think that some of the guys that are big and strong need to still take advantage of the fact that the paint is somewhere where you can dominate and get easy, high percentage points. But I like the fact that guys are shooting three. Centers are a lot more versatile than when I first came into the league.
Like a Rudy Gobert might just be from block to block. He knows where his bread and butter is. He's one of the best in the league. Like, who do you see as the best centers in the league?
Best centers in the league? Rudy Gobert's up there. I think Joel's the best center in the league. Then I have the Joker after him. Then probably Rudy. Mm-hmm. Andre Drummond has had a really good year, too. I've been impressed by his development. I'm trying to think other centers that just jump out at me. Those are probably the top four guys that really get my attention, though. Steven Adams is good. Mm-hmm. But those other four are those guys that really jump out.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that the league has changed, and you named the Spurs and Golden State. Does Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, do those two as the Splash Brothers have any sort of impact on just what teams want to do now with the amount of threes that they're taking, especially when they have the firepower like the Splash Brothers?
Yeah, it's a copycat league. And so the Spurs started the ball movement era. And it started because Tim Duncan and David Robinson got older. So Greg Popovich could no longer play through those guys. So he said, you know what? This Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker guy, these two guys are pretty good too. Yeah. So they started running ball movement from side to side. So they'd run a screen and roll on one side, and then they would kick it to the other side and run another screen and roll. And this ball movement in the corner three, all that started with the Spurs. And I would tell my friends, it's the hardest thing ever to guard. But because the Spurs didn't have the Kobe's and those guys, they'd be like, oh, man, it's not that. I'm like, no, I'm telling you, this ball movement thing is really going to take off. Like, yeah. They thought I was an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, my friends, like, it's crazy that your friends that don't play think they know more basketball than you. I was telling all my friends, like, nah, man, that posting up in the mid-range, that's actually easy to guard. I'm telling you, this ball movement thing is going to catch on. And the Spurs did it, and then Steve Kerr came to Golden State, and he took it to another level.
Yeah.
And they moved the ball, and the Splash Brothers, not only have they affected guys like Steph Curry, especially affect the game, they affected how the younger generation plays the game. Like, taking threes from where he was shooting from was considered shots that would get you put on the bench. Yeah. Now you have young guys practicing that. Mm-hmm. So now these guys, like the Trae Youngs, they grow up practicing that, trying to emulate Steph, and they can hit these shots consistently now because they put in the time to hit those type of shots. So I definitely think the Splash Brothers have changed the game. Golden State has changed the game, and I think it's for the better. I love watching Golden State when those two guys are playing because they get hot, and it's one of those moments where you just got to call your friends and be like, hey, man, got to get to a TV.
Yep.
Klay's got 30 in the quarter. To get to a TV now. And so I love the excitement of that.
You hear coaches talking about, like, watching AAU kids now. As soon as they cross half court, they're looking for that shot, that long shot. That's the way that these guys change the game.
Right.
Did they change some defensive principles as well? How do you even guard a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson or a team that loves to shoot 43s a game?
They've changed defensive principles because, first of all, your defensive shell where you start out defensively is higher now. Mm-hmm. Because before you would say, okay, hey, everybody get back into the paint and then we're going to fan out. Can't do that. Those guys shoot too good. Now you have to stop with your heels on the three-point line because you have to be able to meet Steph and Klay almost as soon as they cross half court or else they might be able to step into a three-point shot. So it changes the way defense is playing that aspect. From a screen and roll standpoint, because they had so many shooters, they really forced teams to start switching the screen and roll. Because, like I said, when I first came into the league, it was about sometimes they would trap the screen and roll more or they would hedge the screen and roll, which simply meant the center would step out, give momentary help, and then he would get back to his man. But you can't do that because when Golden State has all their guys, the ball is moving all around the court, everybody's getting open shots. So they force teams to really switch the screen and rolls now. And then they take advantage as far as one-on-one situations. So they really changed a lot of the game, how younger players view the game, how coaches defend the game. Golden State has been a problem. And then because it's a copycat league, all these GMs say, ooh, we want to be like that. Because the owners say, why can't we play like that? We want to be exciting like them. But they don't have the Golden State Warriors players, so it doesn't work out quite as well for them. So that's why Golden State wins and some of these other teams are pretenders.
What do you think about Steve Kerr looking at his roster, bringing it to its fullest potential, but letting them shoot those threes, if that was pioneering, so to speak, at the time, when everybody else started copying it. Like, what do you think about his ability to evolve or try new things that are now kind of the standard?
I think that Steve Kerr, it took a lot of confidence. It took a lot. He had to have a swagger about him. He just had to have a confidence about him that he was willing to stick with this, even though some other people might not agree with what he's saying or what he's doing. because even at this own network, you hear guys like Charles Barkley say, you don't live by the three you die by. And that was what most people thought back in the day. Like, oh man, you can't win shooting jump shots. But in actuality, you really can if you have certain guys shooting jump shots. So Steve Kerr, to go out there and shoot and play the way he did, have those guys shooting threes the way he did, took a lot of confidence because at that point it wasn't a popular thing to do.
Yeah, that's kind of ballsy for a guy who was getting his first head coaching experience as well.
Well, that's what happens, man. When he had already been on TV, been a GM, and played in the league a lot. When you don't need the job, man, you can do what you got to do. He already had money in the bank. So when you're playing with house money, man, you can do what you got to do. Some of these guys, they need that job. Steve's like, listen, man, I'm going to do it my way. I don't need this.
Yeah. What do you think about the Warriors' culture or their reputation? Because they are going through a tough year. Do you think the culture they have in place, the dynasty that they've created, and the standard of success is good? It's going to help them get the team through this little pattern, like no fracturing, because it's tough to lose. Can we just say it's tough to lose?
I think the Warriors culture is going to get them through this tough time. It's going to help these younger guys become better basketball players. And I can say this from a first-hand experience to a certain degree. Not because I've been a Golden State Warrior, but because I played with younger JaVale McGee. Mm-hmm. And I know our culture wasn't the greatest in D.C. Okay. And he came in and JaVale was always talented. And he was, I would try to tell him certain things and, you know, but our culture wasn't right. So I might say something, but he might be like, listen, he that guy's not doing this. I'm not doing it either.
Yeah.
To see JaVale the way he played in D.C., the wild shots, the Shaq and a fool JaVale that would be trying to take off and dunk on from the free throw line in games and push the ball the length of the court.
Yeah.
To see him come to Golden State and do none of that told me that the culture didn't allow that. Like, hey, man, like, that foolishness, the wild plays, you're not doing that here. And that's what culture is. Because Steve Kerr says, hey, this is what we're going to do. Steph Curry, Clay, Draymond, they echo what goes on. They say, listen, that's not how we play. Mm-hmm. And you saw JaVale McGee get better as a basketball player. Now he's playing great basketball for the Lakers. Because he basically got a crash course in culture from the Golden State Warriors. He's a totally different player from a discipline standpoint than the guy I watched in D.C., and I'm happy for him.
Yeah, and I think Steve relates to players because he knows the game. He's got 5 rings, but he's also open about the fact that he was a role player. He was on the bench. He didn't get a lot of minutes. When you can have that sort of talk with a player that you're coaching, is there instant currency right there? Like, I know what you're going through.
When a coach can tell you about a situation you're going through because he's been through it, you can relate. So some guys that didn't play, when they're trying to tell you, you got to buy in for the team, you're looking at them like, all right, you've never been here before.
Yeah.
You've never been in a contract year where generational wealth is on the line. Yeah, you want me to play your game, but guess what? My family and for generations is going to eat based on how I play this year. So no, I'm not trying to conform to your system. Somebody that's been through it, one of the best is Doc Rivers. He's very good at this. Steve Kerr, too. They get guys to buy in. Be a star in your role. Like, hey, listen, man, well, I'm not telling you don't go out there and have a career year, but don't come out here and take shots that's not going to help you. If you're a rebounder shot blocker, be the best rebounder shot blocker that you can be, but we need you to fit into this role. And when it's somebody that can say, hey, I've been in a contract year, too. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I've gone from being a starter to being a 6-man, too, so I know what it is. Like, when somebody's been through it and they can relate and they can tell you this is how you get past it, you respect it a lot more because it comes from somebody that's done it. If the person hasn't done it, you just look at them like they're crazy.
And Doc and Steve don't stifle personalities either. As long as you get your work done on the court, you can be your own man, you can be your own brand. Would you like to play for a coach like that?
You love it. You love it. I think, it was Doc. I think I'm trying to think of the player he was. I can't remember the player he was talking to, who was a point guard. I think his last name was Hudson. And he yells at Hudson. He said, come here. You know how Doc got that voice? Hey, come here.
Yes.
And he was like, I'm not going to take you out for taking shots, for missing shots. I'll take you out for not taking them. Mm-hmm. And you could just see the guy's confidence raise. Because that's how you got, that's how, he understands, all right, this guy is playing tight because he's worried about when he should get his shots. Man, shoot the ball freely. If you miss 3 shots in a row, who cares? And a lot of players, if you haven't been through it, you don't understand what it is to come off the bench and realize these next three shots determine if I play for the next 3 weeks. Yeah. Like, listen, man, you're going to play. Just know that I'm going to give you a chance. Just go out there and play freely. And it's a certain way that you communicate with your players. That's why some coaches are better than others.
Before I let you go, the Warriors are very likely going to be a lottery pick.
Oh, yeah.
Fans are so curious about who could be next, who's going to be their pick. What do you see right now, talent-wise, in the NCAA that could be possibilities for the Dubs?
Talent-wise, well, I really haven't seen this kid because he got suspended. But Wiseman at Memphis, I think Golden State could definitely use a center. Cole Anthony, Greg Anthony's son, that plays at UNC, I think he's somebody else. I know that Golden State has a lot of guards. But if you bring another guard into the fray, it can't hurt because now it gives you more pop off the bench. I like Anthony Edwards at Georgia. He's a guy that can score the ball. So they have some options. We have to see how the season shakes out because it's early, and we'll find some more names as the season goes along. But if they could find, I like Wiseman because I think they could use the help up front. They could use another big man.
Are you always going to have the fondness for Carolina kids?
Always. I'm Carolina blue through and through. Cole Anthony should be number one in my mind.
Brendan, thank you so much. Really appreciate your
insights. All right, thank you.
Hey, it's Tom Haberstroh here, your national NBA insider for NBC Sports. You're going to want to listen to my latest Haberstroh podcast, my interview with The Athletic's Sam Amick, as plugged in as they come. We're going to talk about the MVP race.
I cannot remember a year with this much individual greatness where, like, you have three or four guys who could look at anybody who doesn't think they are the MVP right now and just think they're out of their minds.
LeBron, Giannis, load management, and also who he thinks is going to be the most likely player to be traded this season. So check it out, Haberstroh, Haberstroh.
Brendan Haywood, 13-year NBA veteran and current analyst for Turner Sports. You can see him on NBA TV's studio shows The Warm-Up. That's NBA TV's studio show airing weeknights at 3 p.m. Pacific. It covers news, on-site reports, social media topics, and fantasy updates. He's also on NBA Game Time. All right, so a lot of eyes on the Warriors. I think people are curious about what the season is. The team's still carrying the worst record in the league. And you know what struck me about that interview, and I'm glad I checked him, was when he said he doesn't think Eric Paschal is going to be Rookie of the Year, or in that conversation.
Right.
That kind of surprised me.
I don't know. Okay, I think he said he doesn't think he's going to be Rookie of the Year.
I don't think
that he said it wasn't in a conversation.
Okay, and that's fine. Maybe it's Ja, right?
Be Ja, especially how Ja, I don't know, we're putting this out, but when Ja balled here the other night.
He balled. That was coming off those back spasms, too.
I mean, he's not wrong. Dude isn't wrong. Good logic.
And I'm not trying to be a homer, either. It's just sort of like, here's what I wonder. We have the luxury of seeing Eric Paschal day-to-day.
Right.
So does that give us more insight into his skill, or does that kind of blind us to whatever is going on around the league?
I'm just going to say this, man. I feel like Paschal is more than worthy about to get the Rookie of the Year. The stats back it up.
Mm-hmm.
However, and I'm not saying I think Ja Morant is going to win it for two reasons. One, because I think he's going to have a better rookie year than Eric Paschal. Two, because it's all about narrative.
It is.
It's all about narrative. Paschal, when we were sitting with him, whenever we talked about Rookie of the Year, he didn't embrace it. It wasn't something that he embraced when we were talking to
him. But that's what he's supposed to say.
I just feel like he's a lot low-key, and I don't think he's going to necessarily advocate for himself enough to get support league-wide.
That I can see. Can the narrative work the other way, where Paschal was a second-round pick? That's a better story stepping into the league and getting it done.
But you could also say the same thing about Ja Morant. Ja Morant came from Murray State.
That's true.
And became a first-round pick. I just think it's all about narrative. I mean, if we already knew going into this season that it was going to be a two-horse race. It was going to be Zion or it was going to be Ja.
Mm-hmm.
Not Ja Rule, Ja Morant.
But
once Zion got injured, Ja just had to play his game. I think he was just going to get it no matter what. I mean, it's, like I said, it's a narrative thing. And it doesn't help that Eric Paschal's on the West Coast.
Yeah, that's a good point. As many people can see him play.
Not as many people can see him play, and I just think that the narrative will never be on Paschal's side to win it, no matter what he does.
I got that. I've been thinking about this narrative stuff and, like, what we see on the inside versus what people looking on the outside see. Are we indoctrinated to this kind of stuff? Like, do I think Pascal is in the Rookie of the Year conversation because that's what the Warriors are telling me? That's what we. The messages that we hear all day. And
he's
been arguably
the best rookie. This season, you know, he just has been. And I mean, he's done it in important games. His stats back it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I just personally think that league wide, they're not going to give it to him.
Yeah.
He's not going to get it.
We're noticing some themes, too, when it comes to other reporters covering the Warriors. Like, Steve Kerr, bless his heart, gets the same questions in every road city that we visit.
Yes.
So, to summarize, it's, what is this season like for you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, how do you go from being, you know, champions, five straight finals, to worst record in the league? I understand why this is a question. I understand why all these questions exist, but it's December now,
no,
right? We've been talking about this for months.
It's that one.
It's, what is this like for you?
Yeah.
What's the other one? Draymond?
What is it like for Draymond in this new
Draymond
environment?
In leadership role, yes. Okay, all solid questions at the beginning of the season.
Well, and in September or October.
Yeah.
My thing is, it's funny. One thing that I do when those questions are asked, I can almost predict what Steve is going to say.
Yes.
And how he's going to say it.
Yes. He's gracious to all of them.
It's funny because
he's
says
kind.
It the same way each time.
What's
like he hasn't heard it. Like he hasn't heard it before.
He does. He pauses to like.
It's interesting,
think.
You know.
Yeah,
I think it's really interesting how
we're
just savoring
it. Yeah, we're, you know, I find it refreshing, or like,
or something like that. You know, we want to win. And really, you know, really.
Yeah, winning is the expectation, but this is a learning season.
Yeah, we gotta be.
our like chorus of voices there was really good.
Yeah, you know, and then you know, Draymond's just a winner, and we know that. But he's done a really good job with the young guys.
Yeah,
done a really good job with the young guys. Pascal, and then he gets a little tired. You know, he gets a little. You know, he's a little washed.
Scrunches his eyes a little bit.
Steve's a little washed. And so he goes, you know, it's a really good time. You know, he's working with Spellman and D'Angelo, and I really like how Draymond is working. You can predict everything. Uh-huh. But, like, I don't know, man. I feel like.
I don't blame Steve for having something canned, because it is nice. It's nice enough.
You know what would be
but
funny,
it's
though?
What would happen if somebody asked you the same question every
I would, like,
day?
Steve is really gracious, because I would 100% be like, we have a SoundCloud. The Warriors have a SoundCloud page. You can get them.
Yes. Here's the link to that answer I've given five
times. There was
times.
A reason why. I remember, like, I think Steve did something with the coaches' challenge because he was tired of answering that question.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's another one he gets. That's like question number four he gets.
Yeah, he gets
because he's a good quote, and people want it, like, they want to hear him say it. They want to jot it in their notepad.
Listen, I get it.
Old quotes.
I get it. You want a fresh quote and all that stuff. But I wish that... He did like how he did with the coach's challenge, where he does one thing and he's like, here, I'm going to point to this quote every time you ask me.
Or what if Raymond is standing by with like a sheet of paper with how he answered this before? He's like, here you go.
Here's your exact quote.
Next, here you go.
Exactly.
So.
But I mean, it's interesting. It's just like, I don't know. I don't want to go too much. But I do feel like I 100% the next road trip we go on, we're going to get that
What
question.
Is this like for you? And I suppose, you know, as a reporter, once you ask a question, that doesn't mean you can never ask it again all season. Like, it's okay to check in maybe, what about like four times a year? Just check in on the top themes. Because the reporters on the road are checking in with the top themes.
But I do feel like
because the season
changing,
evolves.
Though.
What do you mean?
I mean, it changes, right? I think that, like, yes, the Warriors are going to stink all season. But, like, if I hear that question in April...
Yeah.
The same question in April.
By then it might be like, well, the season's almost over. What was it like for you, Steve?
Yeah.
You're like, well.
It sucked and he walks away. But no, like, I mean, Steve's been gracious. He's been way more gracious than I would be.
Yeah, I think so too. I can't imagine. I try to put myself in people's shoes. The repetitiveness of his job. The repetitiveness of these interviews.
But it's funny because like, as a.
And that's the job.
Yeah, or it's a politics question.
Yeah. Some of those he wants to answer. He will take the opportunity to answer any gun control
question.
But
I'm curious to think about this, right? Like, and this is something I want to ask Steve. Probably should have asked him in the last pod. But do you get to the point where, how does it feel when you're just the soundbite? Like, whenever someone is a slow day, hey, what do you think about this politics thing going on?
Yeah.
But like, I wonder if sometimes he thinks he's a token for that. Just because, like... I probably should ask him that at some point. Not on the record, but like, yo, what are you...
How do you deal with that, yeah.
You know, when there's everything, because, as you know, he has a very busy job.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has a very busy job, he still does a good job of looking at the world around him. But sometimes, like, yo, the shooting that just happened 15 minutes ago, Steve, what do you think about it?
Yeah, but if right we're going to ask Steve Kerr about every single shooting, we're going to ask him that question every day, and that's awful.
That is awful. But I just wonder, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I do.
Wonder
is like,
yeah, is he quote guy now?
Yeah, we don't have much to say. It's not because you, like, it really, you know, matters to us that you answer this question. Just, oh, we're just a slow day. Steve, what's the thing about this politics that's going on?
Yeah, there's an impeachment happening. talk about the impeachment.
I was surprised it wasn't an impeachment.
Yeah,
question.
I don't know. But you know what I think prevents Steve from becoming quote guy is the quality of Steve himself.
Right.
So he will have something to say. He will be thoughtful about it. And like we asked him in the podcast where it was like, do you feel obligated to use your platform? His answer is yes.
Yeah.
So I think he doesn't want to squander an opportunity to talk about things in society or things that are impacting Americans. So he does have something educated to say at the ready, I think, because he keeps up with current events.
For sure.
So I think that's what prevents it from being just a robotic guns are bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can see the thought behind all this stuff, which makes him a great quote. And now, people know, when you identify who's a great quote, don't you flock to that person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the man owns it. I mean, like, it's not like, to your point, he doesn't just speak it. You know, the dude was definitely, he was a white man that wore I Am Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, he lives
rubber band during a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he does do it. I was just curious. I just don't want him. I wouldn't want him to just be like, oh, we're not busy today. Ain't nothing going on. Yo, Steve, what do you think about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But you could easily just ask him, like, what's on your gym playlist or what did you have for dinner, I guess.
Gym,
so there's more meaning.
Oats, right?
There's
is
more meaning. Yes, Hollow Oats. There's more meaning when you appeal to his intellect. Do you
for
know
sure.
what I mean?
Definitely.
So it was great to have Steve on the pod. Great to have Brendan on the pod. Hey, give us some feedback. Rate this pod. Let us know who you want on the podcast. We've got some great ones coming up for you. I think that does
I'm
it for this
jealous,
week.
Man. Shout out.
Shout out what?
Brendan. Yeah, man.
Shout out what?
My guy. Shout out Brendan.
Yeah.
I miss him.
Yeah.
He's my guy.
It's really nice to hear that he was a mentor for
it
you.
Made me,
as
it
you
made
were
me think
coming
of
up.
A lot of Turner stories mm-hmm. back in the day, but you know.
All right. Thanks for listening to this edition of Run in Place.
Vibes.